welcome to Engineering Influence, a podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies. Today, I'm very pleased to be joined by Beth Bauer. She's the Executive Director of ACEC Indiana. She is also our new President of NACI. And that took place during our board meeting, officially during board meeting, late April, where she took the reins over from James Smith from North Carolina. And this is, of course, our organization. For those of you who may not be as entrenched into ACEC mechanics as others, NACI is the organization that represents the executives from our member organizations. Again, ACEC is a federation, and really our strength derives from that federation. And each of the executive directors of all the 52 state and metropolitan member organizations come together under the NACI group to further the overarching ACEC goal, but then also to take care of their state needs and interests. And Beth is now in charge of that group. So Beth, congratulations and welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it. And I look forward to talking with you today about NACI and ACEC.
Yeah, I really do want to, hopefully this is the first of many conversations because we need to, I think there's a lot going on at the state level, which needs to be highlighted. And, you know, it's a big job because you have a lot of different interests throughout the country. And states that have similar challenges, but some have unique challenges compared to others. Taking on the role, you know, what is your goal? What's your overarching goal for the upcoming year? What do you want to really accomplish?
Well, it's not just my goal. I think it's a collective goal that over the last few years, NACI has worked really hard to build a strong team of leadership and to keep sort of a continuity of the momentum that we've been working on that is really focused on strengthening the relationship with ACEC, the leadership, the volunteers, the staff, as well as all of the member organizations. And so, you know, it's not a start and stop. It's more of a continuum of strengthening that relationship. I see it a lot like a three-legged stool, you know, so we've got the ACEC volunteer leadership, the ACEC staff, and then the NACI leadership. And with all of us working together, we're really strong, and it's great for the federation, you know, representing the membership's needs. And that's our primary goal, is to keep that strong and steady and not lose a leg of the stool and fall over.
And yeah, that's a really good way of explaining it because, you know, if you remove one of those stools or one of those, the legs and will weaken it, then you're in trouble. Now, I'm, you know, relatively new to the organization, only being here for 2 years. So I don't have the history of relationship between National and NACI, but my understanding from what I've heard, both from our volunteer leaders and on staff and NACI members, is that really the relationship changed over time, and it's a lot stronger today than it was before. And I think the pandemic, for all its negatives, which are multitude, the one thing we can at least say, which was a positive, is that it helped, I think, bring the family together. How have you noticed that change happen over time, where communication between National and the member organizations has kind of matured?
Well, I'll tell you, when Linda came on as the new executive director and brought a great bunch of new staff, including yourself, I think a lot of us veteran MO directors realized, hey, this is a great opportunity to look at this as a fresh start and to look at this as a partnership and how can we all work together to be better as a whole. And I think we've all been really focused on that. How do we, you know, offer our expertise on committees? How do we strengthen what the staff needs as far as perspective and input and to understand what we're dealing with within the states? And so, you know, with that focus, it's been purposeful and it's been strategic. And I think it's starting to show real benefit. The silver lining in the cloud of this last year, I think, has been this opportunity to have regular and consistent communication among the three legs of the stool. You know, so NACI has been holding these biweekly meetings, virtual meetings among ourselves with some of the staff to focus on more of our needs at the state level and to make sure that we're sharing best practices. You know, how do you conduct business in this environment, as well as what are the issues that we're facing, you know, legislatively? What are some of the regulatory problems that we're facing in this environment? You know, how can we help one another, learn from one another, and then try to employ those best practices or best solutions state by state by state? So that's been part of it. And then the other half of it is these biweekly meetings that NACI and the ACEC Executive Committee and senior staff are having, where we're looking at things on a much broader basis. You know, what's good for the whole federation, what's happening at the national level, what's happening within the states that might be a signal or a trend that would be something that everybody else should have their heads up about. It's like anything, you know, that regular and consistent communication is building a stronger relationship. And so we're getting to know each other better instead of just seeing each other, you know, two or three times a year casually. We're really getting to know each other and understand our own state environments, you know, some of the unique issues we have, as well as the things that we all share in common. And so as we get to know each other better and we're building stronger relationships, it's like anything, you know, you can work together better when you know one another.
Absolutely. Yeah. And really those issues at the state level, I mean, tend to, they're not contained to one state. I mean, California seeing something happening is almost it's a red flag for other states in the country to look and say, well, this is coming down the pike. And the only way to really get a hold of it early is to trade information. And a lot of the work that's being done in Congress sometimes is a result of enough states bubbling up in their own state legislatures to get a bill, you know, moved into the House of Representatives. We're seeing that with a lot of things going on with ALEC. We're seeing a lot of things going on, you know, different states. You know, what we all talk about, of course, at the federal level, you know, the big issue for us still is the PPP FAR credits clause issue. That's, of course, impacting a number of our member firms throughout the country. Aside from that, at the state level, you know, what are some of the things that you're hearing are probably the bellwether or most important issues popping up that we really need to pay attention to?
Well, I'll go back to the PPP loan, because that's an important issue in the states as well as nationally, because of the potential for the implementation of guidance at each state and how that may impact firms that cross state lines. And so it's something that we're all dealing with within our states as well as a federation, you know, and the culture of each state and their DOT, you know, client relationship and what they're able and willing to do. So that's still a high priority issue within the states and among the federation. Very important to get resolved. Beyond that, you know, there's always the core issues that have been part of ACEC for forever, you know, so qualifications-based selection, you know, that under, that is always under attack. And in some states, you know, it's really under attack right now. In some states, it's been there and they've gotten past it. In some states, we're seeing new legislation passed. That is just an evergreen issue. I don't think it'll ever go away, but it's really important in the states that all of us do our level best to defend qualifications-based selection and not allow for the profession to get commoditized. At that point, you know, that would be a severe blow to the whole purpose of the profession and ACEC. So that doesn't ever go away. And it ebbs and flows, it rises and falls in states. But that's one of the benefits of NACI in this relationship, is to be able to find out what everybody else is doing, what's worked, what hasn't, and then to be able to share the wins or protect against any real harm.
Yeah, and I two relatively recent examples of successes on that front. It's Illinois, of course. Kevin Ardal worked hard to on QBS and the fight back efforts to erode that, and then also Utah with another success on QBS. So, you know, it's again, like you said, that sharing of information, and it's just that community of being able to say what worked with you guys, what how were you able to defeat this effort, or how were you able to strengthen QBS in your state, and being able to share those experiences definitely helps.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier to take somebody else's win and replicate it, assuming that in context, you know, you can transfer it. Another really big issue that's been going on for at least the last 5 years is really dealing with contract terms, indemnification, duty to defend, transfer of risk, you know, all these kinds of issues where a lot of times the engineering firm, you know, is the smaller partner and trying to be forced to accept terms that are, you know, just really onerous, if not almost fatal for their long-term business prospects. And so that's where NACI has had a lot of success in having some states pass really protective, solid legislation that preserves the engineer's position and doesn't compel them to accept things that, you know, are just not insurable and very poor business decisions. So we've seen some successes in some states, and then that makes it easier to take that and transfer it to another state. So for instance, in Indiana, you know, we passed our first big bill 2 years ago, and then we just passed a reinforcement bill this year. But, you know, North Carolina has a similar one. We actually got our model from Georgia. And I know Alabama just recently passed one. So that's the beauty of it, is to be able to, you know, look at one another and share that information and pool resources. You know, what were your talking points? What was your strategy? Who were your opponents? You know, how did you overcome that? And just to be able to jumpstart that and then to try to succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, from our position at National, of course, you know, we have that lens towards Capitol Hill and Washington, D.C. But, you know, what we would like to do, and of course, and increase over time, is taking those examples of wins and just communicating that out to members in Congress, because, you know, you're able to head, you know, you can kind of head off those efforts if you keep those members up to date and informed. And it's that dual relationship of hearing from the executive directors at the state level, you know, district meetings, or coming to Washington, or having a virtual meeting with a member, and then reinforcing that with advocacy from Steve Hall and his team at GA. It's hitting it with both sides. So you're covering your state side, and then you're also covering the national side, and having those two perspectives in unison is critically important to successful advocacy.
Well, it's a two-way street. You know, I mean, some things have to start at the state level, and then they provide a really good, you know, foundation for federal action, like take, you know, surface transportation funding. You know, I think more than half of the states now have been able to pass a gas tax increase, and the sky hasn't fallen. You know, legislators were reelected, everything, you know, the sun came up and everything moved on. And, you know, it's that type of baseline foundation that then can be shared with members of Congress to show that there's no reason for them to fear taking responsible action when we can demonstrate that half of the states have done that, and their former colleagues or their state friends have stayed in office. And in fact, those states are doing better than ever, and that their constituents can see the improvements, and it's a positive outcome.
Absolutely. I think that's a story that we have to tell even more. It's that this legacy feeling, knee-jerk reaction at the federal level of not wanting to address user fees and thinking that's going to be the poison pill doesn't translate into reality when a majority of the states have taken their own actions to address their own user fees. And yes, of course, the same arguments are made. It's going to be terrible. You're never going to serve in Congress or serve in the legislature again. You're going to, you know, get primaried or whatever. And then all of a sudden, nothing happens because there's that understanding that addressing the user fee is assisting and benefiting those who use the system, right? So it's, okay, better roads, investment in infrastructure, things that are the bread and butter, things that government should do. It's not as, you know, a, much of a death sentence as it's sold to be. That has not broken through Congress. It's still that kind of binary thought process of raise a user fee, lose my election. It's not the case. And so having voices out in AC who are making that point is definitely beneficial, especially now as we are in negotiations on a significant infrastructure package where you have the president with the American Jobs Plan coming and saying that we're going to increase taxes, we're not going to address user fees, and our Republican counter, which is essentially focused on shoring up the trust fund, bringing actual more people into the trust fund and expanding the net of people who actually pay to use the system, and trying to find out where that middle ground is going to fall.
Critical issue. I mean, this is the time that, you know, we've all been waiting for to have this level of conversation and focus. And, you know, nobody can, you know, throw the dart and know exactly where it's all going to land. But just the fact that we have, you know, the highest level of conversation, you know, that kind of exposure, it's a great opportunity for all of us to use the relationships that we have at the state level and with Congress and all of us working together back to that three-legged stool, all of us applying our expertise and our relationships to try to come out with something that's going to be lasting and meaningful and impactful.
Absolutely. So Beth, I have to ask the question. It's the first time in history in ACEC where the triumvirate of the president, the newly elected or newly appointed board chair, Robin Greenleaf, and of course yourself as NAC president, are all women. It's a great, I think, change in a signal of progress on natural kind of the natural evolution towards a more diverse representation of ACEC as a whole. You know, what does that, you know, mean to you? And you know, what do you think? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's one that, you know, as it's happening to you, at first you don't really think about it until other people start to talk to you about it. Yeah. And then, you know, I had to kind of, you know, take a step back and realize, oh, you know, this is a big deal. I just hadn't really thought about it because, you know, we tend to just think of ourselves as people and don't focus on it all that much. But it is a milestone within ACEC and, you know, I'm happy to be a part of it. There's so many, you know, just really smart, confident, capable women in the organization at the state level and, of course, within the staff and the volunteers. And you know, whatever, you know, I can do to be supportful of that and to demonstrate, you know, we're all capable and competent professionals that are here to work together. I'm pleased to do that. And I do recognize it is a milestone and I'm happy to be a part of that.
Yeah. We want to keep, everyone active in the organization and, it is it's a great milestone. You know, and it just shows that, everybody can, you know, just get active in the organization and come up through, the ranks of, volunteer leadership or executive leadership. And, there's a place for you here. That's, I think, the big thing.
And you know, most of us are working on that within our own member organizations. You know, we're all actively trying to recruit, you know, more diverse individuals into our organizations, more diverse candidates into our leadership programs and onto our boards and chairing our committees. And, you know, that's a high priority really across the country through the member organizations. You know, we know it's a very important part of the new national strategic plan, the DEI and belonging committee. You know, I can speak from my own experience in Indiana. We've had a diversity and inclusion committee for about 15 years. We started it before we really knew exactly what we were doing, but we had a number of large city clients that were starting to establish diversity goals. And so we just jumped into it, and it's matured really well here. You know, we've got a number of programs and special services that we provide, but we're not alone. There's a lot of MO organizations that have the same type of activity and focus. And, you know, we just hope to do more. It's an evergreen issue too, right? We'll never be done, but we're all working and striving and trying to do better.
Well, Beth, I really appreciate you taking time to be on the program today. I do not want this to be the last. I think that there's a great opportunity for NACI to update all of our listeners on what's happening at the states, and I hope we can do that over the next 12 months. But thank you again for taking the time, and wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I look forward to coming back. Invite me back anytime.
And again, this has been Engineering Influence, a podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies. We'll see you next time.